At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
It was just such a masterclass of car positioning by Max.
Verstappen roars around the outside to take the lead in spectacular fashion.
Unbelievable.
He obviously had to take this gamble, and it's really paid off brilliantly.
The fact that we're talking about Williams versus Ferrari, I feel like I'm in 1993 or something.
They are one of the teams to watch out for the future.
Do we think Fred Vasseur is a man under pressure?
To not make it through to Q3 in Italy, naturally there's going to be pressure.
Charles today, I feel like he was driving with a bit of sportive anger.
I saw a strange thing after qualifying. I saw a happy Fernando Alonso.
If I was Jack Doohan, I might be like, do you think it was worth taking me out for a driver who didn't really push Pierre Gasly that hard?
What a way to round off a week of celebrating the F1 World Championship's 75th anniversary. Max Verstappen gave us one of the best lap one overtakes we've ever seen. We saw the two McLarens go wheel to wheel, Ferrari fighting Williams, and some strategies paying off while others went out of the window thanks to the safety car. Welcome everyone to F1 Nation's review of an action-packed Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me in the Imola paddock is former Red Bull Racing driver Daniil Kvyat and F1.com editor Greg Stewart. Now, when I say we're in the Imola paddock, we're actually in the Red Bull Energy Station where it's all kicking off after what was a brilliant win by Max. And it was all done at turn one, wasn't it, Danny?
Yes, indeed. I think that move was what made the race, obviously, deciding move and very well executed, obviously, just send it and with some risks, but paid the price in the end, didn't it? So that's the most important is the outcome, for sure.
And Greg, they say you can't overtake at Imola. Well, I don't know how many overtakes we got in that race, but it was an absolute screamer.
It was a screamer, but as you say, Max's win made by that lap one overtake, and he did it so cleanly as well, which I liked. You know, there were shades of that move that he and Hamilton had at 2021, but it was lovely and clean, and then he drove off into the distance and it made his race.
Danny, put your helmet back on. Okay, it seemed to me that Oscar Piastri made the better getaway at the start. In a funny kind of way, did that help Max, because he was able to tuck in behind, get some slipstreaming?
Yeah, for sure, you're right. It was actually like it seemed very clean for Oscar, everything at that point. Just I think only problem was that Russell actually had a really good start and he was getting some slipstream. He was looking for the inside, and Oscar was trying to cover the inside, and I think he was more focused on the left mirror than the right mirror, and he kind of already didn't expect anything happening there. So once Russell backed off, he sort of thought the corner was his, so he took it quite conservatively, and obviously Max had no choice than just to send it, because otherwise if he took it conservatively, he would be done probably also by Russell in a sort of a train situation there. And he obviously had to take this gamble, and it's really paid off brilliantly.
From a standing start, how much braking are you doing into turn one here at Imola?
You still do some. It's definitely reduced from a qualifying lap with the DRS open and everything, but for sure it's still some braking. I think they managed to get to seventh gear, sort of something like that, for turn one. So it's still braking. It's a bit sweeter and smoother braking. And also it's still easy to lock up the wheels because you come there with less downforce. So you need to have a lot of sensitivity there, of course, and take some risks.
Greg, we saw a very robust defense by Oscar in Saudi Arabia just a couple of races ago at turn one. Were you expecting him to be a little tougher on Max?
I think it seemed a little bit like he was caught by surprise, because when I was watching that, I was expecting Max to come out P3 at that corner. But it was just such a masterclass of car positioning by Max, whereby he blocks George Russell on the left. Not unfairly, just that's the way it goes. But he also was positioning the car in such a way that Lando couldn't come around the right. And then I think Oscar was probably just, by the time he'd seen that he was about to be overtaken, I think Oscar's a very clean, fair driver. And he sort of just knew he had to give it up. But yeah, perhaps he could have been an inch or two further on the right. But yeah, bit of a strange one from Oscar.
It was a very clean move by Max. And some people say he's too harsh when he's going wheel to wheel with any other drivers. But there was nothing wrong with that.
I think definitely not. I think by the time Oscar realized that there is something, that he might lose position, it was too late. So obviously there was nothing to be done other than going for a contact, banging wheels and risking to damage your front wing and getting a puncture. I think obviously, like Greg said, like he was caught by surprise, and that played a huge role for sure, yes.
It's funny, isn't it, how some races everything goes your way and other races nothing goes your way. And just look at the contrasting fortunes of our front row starters today. Max, it was just like the sea opening up for Moses. Everything, he could just breeze just straight through the whole race. The VSC came out at the right time. The safety car came out at the right time. And for Oscar, kind of everything went wrong. And I actually think he should embrace this P3 at what was a very difficult day in the office. He salvaged something.
And also, he's still leading the championship. I honestly don't think Red Bull are a particular threat in the team's championship with the issues they've been having with the second driver. McLaren clearly ahead in the team, so for McLaren it's still great, and Oscar's still leading the championship.
Good point you make. It's crazy to think that McLaren are now 132 points ahead of Mercedes in second place. The Constructors' Championship is theirs, so I think all the focus on the pit wall now needs to be about the Drivers' Championship. We saw a stunning pole position by Oscar Piastri yesterday. He actually lost a couple of tenths, didn't he, when he hit traffic on that final couple of corners of his Q3 lap. Is it time? Is it time, guys, that McLaren need to back one horse?
Yeah, I don't know what was going on today. Also, after the last safety car restart, took a bit of time for them. They lost a bit of time behind each other. And yeah, it looked like they weren't willing to give Oscar a led-by Lando message. So probably, yes, I mean, at some point. But I mean, Lando's very fast driver as well, you know. I feel like they're going to keep giving them a bit equal chances for a while still.
I'm sort of joshing with you. This is only race 7. But I think what we've learnt at Imola is that Max is really in this championship now. And there's only going to be a certain amount of time that the McLaren drivers can take points off each other before they could get caught short and Max could just steal it.
Yes, for sure. I would say, honestly, also, I wouldn't forget that Red Bull is a very quick car. I feel like they are not far from McLaren when they put the car in the working window. The pole difference was only half a tenth. And also in the race where the deck is low, I feel like Red Bull can definitely be there with McLaren. And especially if McLaren is behind them, it's not going to be easy. And of course, also having not much to lose, can fight a bit harder with the elbows out against those guys.
Greg, you've spoken to Max on several occasions in the TV pen this weekend. Have you sensed from him that he now genuinely believes in this RB21?
I don't feel that full conviction yet. I mean, I think he had a bit of a tricky Friday. And I don't...
Do you know what, Greg? Sorry to interrupt, but they seem to always have tricky Fridays. And I'm now wondering whether they intentionally go quite way out with the setup and then work hard on Friday night on the simulator, and then they always seem to bring it back.
Yes, and I think, and no disrespect to Yuki Tsunoda, but what they could really do with at the moment is just a really consistent benchmark. Well, Max is the benchmark, but somebody for Max to measure himself off so they could properly A-B test setups and work towards a setup that will work for the rest of the weekend. As to the championship and whether he's in the fight, it seems like he is. I don't know how he is, because it seems like it's a hard car to drive. Daniel and I were talking about it earlier, and Daniel's opinion is that it's a very fast car, but with a very narrow operating window. And Max just seems to be able to do amazing things with it.
Yeah, it's been actually like that, to be honest. It's a bit of a peaky car, let's say, with a huge potential, but to be in that sweet spot, it's very narrow, and you always try to maximize the car potential while building it, and then let engineers and drivers deal with it to do a good job with setup and driving. But if you slide slightly away from this window, let's say, then the consequences are also huge, and you lose a lot of lap time. Probably, if I had to guess again, McLaren has a bit of a broader window, but I wouldn't be surprised even if at the peak performance is actually the same between the two cars. But McLaren's window is just broader and easier to hit.
Why, Danny? Why is Max Verstappen capable of keeping the car in the window, and it seems so few other drivers are able to do that? What does he do?
I think it's a lot of experience with the car. Of course, him and the GP work very well together. You know, engineer also needs to understand very well what the driver needs, the feedback, the simulator work. It all has to come together. You know, when you're there and when the team is fully backing you, when the team is always listening to your, let's say, advice and complaints about the car issues, in the end, it will help. But you have to still drive it, of course. So it's important to be very, very on it as well as the driver.
And when you're on that tightrope of the working window, you're on the tightrope of grip. You don't want, if you go over it, the car underperforms. If you're under it, the car is underperforming. What part of your body as a racing driver is giving you the signals to keep it in the window? Is it your bum, your feet, your hands, your... What has Max got that it seems Yuki and all the other guys who have been his teammate in recent seasons haven't?
I don't know, it's hard to tell you without driving that car, to be honest. Yeah. But it's just overall package, I think. It's just a feeling, sensitivity. I think he's a fantastic driver for sure.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Greg, what will Oscar take from this weekend?
I mean, I don't think he'll be too disappointed at all. Of course, in the moment, I think when you spoke to him in the press conference, he looks a little down, a little flat. But, you know, we're in a world now where we have 24 races. That was the seventh of them. He's still in a really comfortable position going forward. If he can put together a strong triple header, staying on the podium, grabbing a win in Monaco perhaps, he'll be in great shape going into the summer and then into the summer break. So I think he'll be fine. And I think he's doing a really impressive job. I think Andrea Stella said on Friday, he's a faster driver now. And he really has become the complete package, or looking like the complete package. So his evolution from year one to year two to now year three, I think has been a template of how a driver should evolve. So very impressed.
How long does it take a driver to feel completely at home in Formula One? Is it year three? Is it year six?
That's a good question. I think, you know, sometimes even as a rookie, you can feel relatively comfortable in the car already, but you will miss some details about the setup, the development through the weekend. And I think maybe 2 or 3 years, it really gives you a full picture. The driver from FP1 until the race, you need to consider so many things in setting up the car and how you work with your engineers, with the tires, and how you give the feedback to the engineers as well, because ultimately they also decide a lot what goes on your car setup and what doesn't. You can be a really good driver, but if you don't know how to make that car work for you as well, then you don't have grip, and then you cannot use your driver's potential.
Do you think drivers get faster? Just to elaborate on what Greg was saying from Andrea Stella, are you a faster driver from one season to the next, or are you just learning to use the tools better?
I think that's probably a better way of putting it, because the speed, you know, as a driver, you're probably not that much better than when you are a rookie. The way you can attack the corner, sometimes you even might be thinking less, you know, when you're a rookie. Then when you're already experienced, you consider more things, you know. So it's important to come into qualifying, let's say, with a very fresh, unattached mindset, where you can just push and use what the car is giving you without anticipating too much. Because the more you anticipate, the more it takes from driving, you know. So, yeah, it's about using the tools, I think, to your favor.
So what is your take on Lando Norris's qualifying performances this year? He said after qualifying fourth here that he'd underperformed. He was very frustrated, wasn't he, Greg? We saw it in Bahrain as well. Is he overthinking qualifying, do you think?
Maybe. It could be one of the reasons. Maybe this moment, maybe this car is not particularly... it makes him think a little bit too much. Maybe he comes to Q3 and this car is not giving him that comfort on how he can lean on the tires at the limit in this decisive moments. And then you start thinking a bit more and more, and maybe you leave a little hundreds here, a couple of hundreds there, and then it accumulates in a couple of tenths through the lap, and then then you start, you know, P4 instead of a pole. So it's tricky. He needs to do the job of analyzing, of course, what works for him, what doesn't, and where it comes from.
I do sense that there is maybe like a reflexive element coming into his driving where he's not just letting it flow. You also saw it in the race. His moves seem a bit more overthought than Oscar's, where Oscar was decisive when he came through the field. Lando seems to take the beat longer just to think about it more. So I've never been a Formula One driver, and I'm sure he doesn't need any advice from me. But if I was to give him advice, I'd tell him to just try and get more in the flow state.
Do you think it's significant that he's turned off his social media? Is that a change in mindset for him?
I think so as well. In Jeddah, apparently he was on the grid with headphones on, which was the first time he'd done that. So I think he's seeing the need to just get a bit more serious, get a bit more in the zone. And I think that will reap benefits for him. But also, to be fair, in the last couple of years, he hadn't had much competition at McLaren, certainly when he was with Daniel Ricciardo, who didn't seem to be able to get a tune out of that McLaren. Oscar now coming in and taking that progression seems to have challenged Lando. And now we're seeing Lando struggle a little bit relative, although we are talking about very small margins.
It's tiny margins, isn't it? I mean, were you a music guy on the grid?
Yes, I actually was. I think mainly because in Formula One, once you walk from your driver's room until you reach the grid, there is so much distractions and so many people, and I was just trying to, you know, I put sunglasses on and I put the shades on.
It's great that you got a torpedo. You know what, he was one of my favourite drivers. He was always very polite, very charming. He was about 12 when he started driving for us. And he won in F3. He was very quick. Beat Carlos Sainz in F3, same team.
Just quick, I know you've got to dash out, but was that the best turn one move you've ever seen Max do?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of win it or bin it, but it was kind of, Max was, he's so good at just seeing a gap and being so decisive, and I think maybe Oscar was more focused on, you think he was more focused on George on the left, and he left the smallest gap, and Max, you know, boom, straight there.
And you had the rub of the green today, didn't you? The VSC came out at the right time, the safety car came out at the right time.
More importantly, we had the pace and the deg. So whatever McLaren had, we were able to respond, and you know, we had better deg and very good pace today.
And what does that mean going forward?
It means we enjoy Sunday night and then do it all again, this time next week. But anyway, nice to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you, Christian. Nice to see your old boss again.
Yes, yeah, I saw them this morning because it would be rude if I wouldn't pass by. I saw Helmut, I saw Christian. Always say hi, of course, to the old bosses, you know. Always good to see them, a lot of memories. And they are always on top of it. So
I'd well forgotten, by the way, that you beat Carlos Sainz in F3.
Yeah, yeah, you forgot many things. No, yeah, of course, it was good years. We and Carlos, we had a lot of good fights in junior categories, and he and I, I think, helped to grow each other quite a lot. So he's a fantastic driver.
Now look, Christian said we've got to do it all again next weekend in Monaco. I think it's going to be hard for Red Bull because their car is really good through quick corners, right? We saw it at Suzuka. It was brilliant through the medium and high speed here. Just look at the pace of the car in Sector 1. Monaco has no quick corners. Advantage, yes. McLaren?
Yes, I know that this was a bit of a tendency. Again, I would never leave Red Bull out, to be honest. It seems like they're also very good with updates. And I know I've been driving for this team, and I know that they take updates very seriously. There is always purpose in everything they do. The IR upgrades they bring, it's all very, very serious. And even if there is a weak area, there is immediately going to be a huge report about this weak area, and it's going to be tried to be tackled for the next race. And it's a very, very high technology team as well. So yeah, for sure, I wouldn't write them off.
Can we now move this on to the battle between Williams and Ferrari? Okay. Hamilton finishes P4, Alex Albon P5, Charles Leclerc P6, and had Carlos Sainz not pitted as early as he did in the race, who knows, he would have been up there as well. You were actually watching the race in the Williams garage.
Yeah.
What were your observations?
Yeah, no, I was joking with Carlos. I'm going to bring you a couple of tenths with me to Imola, and will be interesting to see. And honestly, I saw the race. I watched the race from the garage and listened to some radio comms. They are very calm, very, very on it. Also in the critical situations, they were really, really on it. Everything was very calculated. Even when things weren't going well with Carlos, I was like, even I was feeling like, you know, it's not going great, but they kept calm and they brought him back into points, you know, and I think they are one of the teams to watch out for the future. They are making the right calls. Of course, there is a long way, but they are very well organized, and Carlos and Alex, I was teammates with both of them, and they are doing a very solid job. Yeah, Alex was playing a bit with fire today in turn one.
Talk us through the move. What did you make of his attempt on Charles Leclerc?
Well, yeah, I mean, Charles today, I feel like he was driving with a bit of sportive anger, and you could see that, and of course he has to, and Alex was always missing this couple of, you know, kilometers per hour at the end of the straight to just be slightly ahead in the brake zone, but always was missing this couple of meters, and he tried one lap, and Charles obviously is, I was thinking, like, for stewards it would be very hard to understand if it's a small penalty or not. Like, I don't know, I would have trouble calling it myself, to be honest.
The fact that we're talking about Williams versus Fry, I feel like I'm in 1993 or something. It's incredible, because they had that great Miami Grand Prix, and the noises coming out of the team after that was because of the idiosyncrasies of the Miami track. And when we go to Imola, we don't expect that sort of advantage. We don't expect to be messing around, mixing it with the front-running teams. And then they just got the car in a sweet spot. Alex said after the race it was just a really drivable car, one that he felt really comfortable with. And they're doing a fantastic job. And it was interesting that Daniil was able to listen to the radio, because that was obviously a talking point after Miami. James Bowles saying that we need to, like, clear up the radio conversations and make calls more directly. So it sounds like they've already started implementing that. And they're just doing a fantastic job. Like Daniil says, I would back them to have further success going forward.
It's interesting, isn't it? They have two top drivers, and there seem to be different philosophies along the pit lane, don't there? You know, some teams, actually, where we're sat now, they seem to put all their eggs in one basket, the Max Verstappen basket, and that works very well here. James Vowles, he wants two top drivers to move things along.
Well, it's the best thing to do in their situation. You know, I think I don't see any other way for them. Like, how do you expect them to improve things going forward? When they start from quite the bottom, you need you can't favor one person. You have to push the team forward, motivate them, score points where you can for the Constructor Championships. It's I see it as the only way forward. Then when you're fighting for championship, it's different. It's working for McLaren as well at the moment, but it might get a bit tight in that team as well soon.
How difficult do you think the next step for Williams is? I'm just looking at the championship points. They are 31 points ahead of Haas in P6, Williams in P5, and then Ferrari in P4 have more than double what they have. So is it the right call to have put everything onto 2026 as they have? Do you think there's nothing more to be gained this year?
Carlos was saying in the pen on Thursday what he would really love is for Williams to be a team where they could develop the 2025 car and the 2026 car at the same time, as the top teams can do. He says they're not there yet. So I think for Williams, probably the goal for this year should be just hold on to that P5. I don't think they're going to move towards Ferrari. I think that might be unrealistic. But if they could hold on to that P5, it would be such a big morale boost. And then it just depends what their 2026 car is like and what their 2026 Mercedes power unit is like.
Do we think Fred Vasseur is a man under pressure, because neither Ferrari made it through to Q3 in qualifying, and they did actually show some great pace in the race, but what do you think the debrief on Monday morning just up the road from this racetrack is going to be like in Maranello?
They've got problems. Charles was super dejected yesterday, so was Lewis. Okay, they've been vindicated by Sunday to some extent, because they had a great recovery drive coming back through the field. You could see Lewis was buzzing after the race. But Ferrari's to not make it through to Q3 in Italy, naturally there's going to be pressure. Arguably, Fred has the hardest job in motorsport, because he's the head of effectively a national institution in Ferrari. So it's a difficult one. And speaking to him yesterday, you could see the pressure etched on his face. He John Elkann won't have liked that, Ferrari head honcho. So, yeah, he will be under pressure.
It's a huge brand, you know, worldwide in Italy as well, because, for example, Red Bull Racing, they came into Formula One, you know, they just said, well, let's have fun while doing it and win a few Constructors' Championships. Of course, they also worked really hard, don't get me wrong, but in Ferrari, it seems like it's a bit more than that. It's a bit more politics involved as well. But I think this generation car has been always tricky for them. They never really had a dominant car, except for 2022, actually. It makes me think they did the most pole positions, I think. But then somehow it just wasn't clicking anymore. And I think the true fruits of their job will probably be seen next year with a very big regulation changes. And then if it's still same situation, probably then it will be again some changes probably.
I think the other thing that we have to consider is the fact that they brought in Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton, who is not just an F1 driver, he's a massive brand in and of himself. So all of my Italian friends in England go, we got Hamilton in Ferrari, we got Leclerc, why can't we win? So there's that kind of conversation going on as well. More eyeballs on the team, arguably, than when it was Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc. So the excuses get slightly harder to find because you've got a 7-time world champion who can't make it through to Q3. So I think that also feeds into the pressure.
I think the basis of his frustrations are that almost in every race this year, we've seen a stint in the race from him that has been as competitive as anyone at the front. Yet they can't seem to replicate that for all of the stints in a race. And they certainly can't do it over one lap on a Saturday. And actually, Fred Vasseur said on Thursday that we come away from most races this year feeling that we've underperformed. We haven't got the most out of the car.
Just doesn't look like, even when Charles does an exceptional lap, it just doesn't seem like it's there to put a fight to McLaren and Red Bull. So it just feels like there is just not enough grip. Even when the car is in that sweet spot, which we spoke about, it seems like that sweet spot is not enough.
I think the litmus test for me is going to be Monaco next weekend. Just think how Charles Leclerc dominated that race last year. Brilliant in qualifying, he just ran away in the race. Well, actually didn't. He was going very slowly in that first stint, but because he knew he couldn't get overtaken. He was brilliant. I can't see them. I can't see them taking pole.
Politely disagree. Based on just a feeling that their car in the slower corners should be able to be a match for the other front-running team. So I
hope you're right, Craig. I hope you're right. But
it would be sensational if they could do it.
It can happen, yeah, for sure, because Monaco is one of these tracks which can... it's a particular track, so it can bring something out of the car and out of the tires that... that maybe wasn't there before, and suddenly you can see someone else dominating there, and why not?
Let's talk about Mercedes. It was a disappointing one, wasn't it? George Russell starts P3, ends up crossing the line P7 in the race, and Antonelli, in his home race, born in Bologna, just up the road, struggled. Has to be said, he struggled. What were the issues, do we know, for Mercedes?
Well, George Russell didn't seem to have any answers when I heard him speaking in the pen. It just seemed that they didn't have speed. They obviously took that gamble yesterday in qualifying, running the medium, put George P3, but then he just didn't seem to have any pace to move forward. Also got unlucky with virtual safety car. George pitted on lap 12, I believe. So things didn't fall his way, and then poor Kimi Antonelli pulling off with what I think the team called a throttle issue. At least he pulled off in front of his adoring fans. But it was sad to see. But yeah, it would be a head-scratcher for Mercedes tonight, I think. Disappointing after some stronger recent performances.
I mean, it was very good over one lap. Give us your thoughts, Daniel, actually, on the job you think George Russell is doing, not only here with that P3 in qualifying, but the season he's putting together as well.
No, you know, I didn't race George much, but looking from outside, I rate him very high as a driver. I think like he's taking the most out of the car most of the times. And also his last couple of years against Lewis, they were very strong, you know. And I don't know, today it seems like it just, there was this deck that they hit a bit earlier than the others. It was not clear why. They just, it seems like he was in there for a while, and then suddenly, you know, there was no pace, tire deck, and they had to box. So probably it's one of those races where it didn't work, but in Miami it also didn't look very, very strong. At some point the deck was catching up to them. So I think they will need to really look into their tire behavior on their car.
George is a smart cookie, isn't he? I love the way he put the medium tire on for his final run of Q3. Okay, it compromised him a tiny bit in the race in that the tire had one lap on it at the start of the Grand Prix today. But I just thought without that medium tire, he wouldn't have been P3 on the grid. He seems to think outside the box. As for Kimi Antonelli, what is it like? Can you imagine what it's like being 18 years of age? How much pressure does that bring?
Yeah, for sure it can be a bit overwhelming, especially for a young guy his age. And I think to some extent it probably does influence him at this stage, but he will, I think, mature more and more with time, and hopefully, you know, they're willing to give him that time that he needs, because they took a bit of a gamble of putting him in there. Obviously, he seems like he proved in Miami that he has that speed in him that everyone was talking about. It was really clear that he has it in him. So he needs a bit of time, you know, to, I think, get it out of him consistently. And of course, at the moment, he's missing this one big breakthrough result, you know, where everyone will be like, wow, that was a great drive. Yeah, for sure, it's missing. But, you know, the season is long, and hopefully people around him understand that.
What does a breakthrough result like you've just described do for a driver's confidence?
I think it's very important. Like, I remember, like, me in Red Bull Racing, for me it was Monaco 2015, where in quali it all started to work. Actually, in Barcelona 2015 as well, like, in qualifying it started to click for me, like, against Daniel back then. And in Monaco was first really strong result for me in my career, and it gives you a big confidence boost. It's important. So I think this will also help him. I think it can come, because Mercedes seems to be a bit inconsistent as a car at the moment, but when it clicks, it actually seems to be able to provide you with a good pace. So I think that, everything needs to click for him in this sort of race.
I saw a strange thing after qualifying yesterday. I saw a happy Fernando Alonso. Now, I am a massive fan of Fernando, but the frustration on his face at all six prior races this year has just been painful to see. And suddenly, they bring an upgrade, and it really worked here. And it was wonderful to see him qualifying P5 with Lance Stroll just a little bit further back in P8. I feel it was the race didn't work out for pit stop reasons, etc. But I feel this was a breakthrough moment for that team.
Maybe you're right. They looked definitely competitive yesterday, but it needs to be double checked in Monaco and Barcelona, especially, I think, in their case, because again, it seems like their sweet spot just was not good enough, you know, on that car. And after already, what it is, seven races, at least once you find that sweet spot, and it happened for them yesterday. So it's good, you know, it's a promising thing, but needs to be double checked, I think.
That all of the telemetry was saying that they were getting more load through the upgrade, and it was an extensive upgrade. It was the floor, yes, but also some of the top surfaces as well. I'm sure it wasn't a coincidence that Aston Martin put a video out last week saying, you know, Adrian Newey had some lunchtime conversations with the aerodynamicist there. And this is the fruit, his first fruit of his labour.
What a luxury position to be in. Okay, Adrian isn't focused on the 2025 car. He's got his mind very much focused on 2026, apparently. But just to be able to use him as a sounding board, I was talking to Eric Blander, who's the aerodynamic chief, and he was saying it's so useful just to be able to sit with him at lunch and just bounce some ideas off him. Whether he's going to provide any real input into the upgrades that come this year, I don't know. But seems like if I was Lawrence Stroll and I had Adrian Newey and the Aston Martin had been performing the way it had in the first six races, I'd say, Adrian, could you whip something up on the old drawing board to help us?
And I think it's significant too that since this regulation change in 2022, Aston Martin have always started strong and haven't been able to make progress with any of the cars. Even 2 years ago when Alonso got eight podiums, actually, the car by the end of the year was nothing like as competitive as it was at the start of the year. So for them to be developing the car positively at this early stage in the season, I think is going to be a huge shot in the arm. And of course, you have worked with the great man, Adrian Newey. What was that like?
I think I can say it's a great to share the team with such a legendary person. You know, of course, we happened to work together in very tough times for Red Bull Racing. And I think I saw a lot of moments of tension at that time. The problems with engine, they were quite big at the time. I saw a lot of conversations, high tension conversations. But then again, after initial shock, let's say, after a few races, then hard work started again. And you could see Adrian, he gained his interest back. And he really was focusing, talking to drivers, having meetings with us, asking a lot of very precise questions, you know, writing it down. And then, you know, always then comes back like a little puzzle with a new front wing, maybe a little winglet here and there. And the car just started to be more and more alive, you know. And that's it. When it became alive, I wasn't there anymore. So.
But Danny, when I've been told that he thinks like a racing driver. Those conversations you had with him in the garage and things like that. Wait, did you feel like you were talking to another driver?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't think so, actually. I think they were very technical. He wants to know a lot about the balance, of course. He wants to know a lot about the how the car behaves. But I understood very well that he understood when I was talking in the racing terms as well. Yes, for sure. So it was easy for me to explain. And then obviously he thinks for a bit. He doesn't say much after he gets your comments, but the upgrades, most of the times they bring then performance, you know.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Black Friday, wow, shop Wayfair now. Month-long big deals, yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong, check out this song. Best in decor, Black Friday score.
Garlands and trees,
saving with ease.
Lights for your house, lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets that are you. Everything home, these things in chrome. Hands of the clock, area roads. Fast shipping, wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season, win the win the season.
Wayfair, 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 Wayfair.
There's more to come from Imola in just a moment, but I wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcast you can listen to this week. My next guest on F1 Beyond the Grid is racing legend Dario Franchitti, who tells me why he never became a Formula One driver despite a number of opportunities and his success in IndyCar. That's available from Wednesday, and the latest episode of F1 Explains comes from inside the Haas garage, and it's all about what the pit crew, the mechanics, and the engineers do during a race. Search for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Explains on your podcast app. Now, what about Isaac Hadjar? Again, the lead Racing Bull driver. Earlier in the weekend, Tim Goss, the technical director at the team, was praising him for his intelligence and his ability to turn information from engineers into performance on the track. And at one point in the race, he was right up there, wasn't he?
He's been the surprise of the season. I'm happy to go on record and say I didn't know much about him coming into the year. And then you get to Melbourne, crash on the formation lap, and I was like, oh, God, they put this guy in at the deep end and he's not swimming. Ever since then, he's been magnificent, super fast over one lap, did a great job to get P9 on the grid, and then a really strong race from him. And he's done so well this year. I'd argue he's one of the standout rookies, perhaps the standout rookie.
I think you're right. And it was nice to see that a little incident in practice where he just kissed the barrier didn't seem to affect him, his confidence, and he was straight back on it. I mean, in fact, his final lap of Q3, he overcooked it very early on, didn't he? And that sort of meant he wasn't able to complete the lap and showed a bit of frustration. But he's a competitive animal, that's for sure.
He is a competitive animal. Beats himself up a bit like Lando does as well. We heard in Miami, he was cross at himself because he was trying to catch Yuki Tsunoda for the final point and made a few mistakes on the last lap. But that's good. You know, he's seven races in. He's going to settle down. He's going to get more and more comfortable. Still such a young kid as well. He's going to get more comfortable in his own skin. His potential, though, looks to be colossal.
Yeah, and it's now 2 points finishes in the last three races.
Exactly, and finishing ahead of Yuki Tsunoda in the Red Bull. Okay, Yuki started in the pit lane, but symbolically, that's a big deal.
It is, and of course, you mentioned Yuki. He had to bounce back from that huge accident in Q1 yesterday. He was very open afterwards and said it was his mistake, pushing too hard early in the lap. The team then had to build up a new chassis overnight. Of course, that's a car that he won't have driven before, so the laps to the grid were hugely important to him. I actually thought Yuki did a good job.
I think he did a good job. I think it was a shame to have had that crash because arguably he's looked fairly decent, fairly comfortable. Okay, hadn't had a real standout performance, but he was bedding himself in the car. It was sort of a shame to see him. It looked like slightly overdriving in the build-up to the crash. You saw him take a lot of curve at Tamburello and then obviously a lot of curve at Villeneuve. So that was a bit of a shame. Bit of a setback for Yuki. Hopefully he can bounce back. I think it's useful for him to have Monaco straight away. But obviously that is a big confidence track. And if he's lacking confidence after this weekend, he could struggle in Monaco.
But you just have to build up in Monaco. Don't do what Perez did a couple of years ago and crashing in Q1, for example. That's the Red Bull young drivers. There is one other young driver I feel we should talk about, and that is the return of Franco Colapinto. What did you make of his weekend?
Not terrific. Look, I think he's obviously had a challenging return to Formula One. He had that slightly dual reputation from his 9 races at Williams last year of being very smart, very on it, but also he did rack up quite a big repair bill. You think back to Brazil last year where he had 2 really big crashes. And I think the team, and Flavio Briatore in particular, will have been quite annoyed that he had as big a crash as he had yesterday. And then I just sensed in the race that he was just slightly chastened by that experience and wanted to just do the race, get round, get a race under his belt. But the pace didn't look as strong as Gasly. Okay, it was good that he cooperated with Gasly and let Gasly through at one point. But it wasn't the phenomenal return that perhaps some of us were expecting. And if I was Jack Doohan watching, I might be like, do you think it was worth taking me out for a driver who didn't really push Pierre Gasly that hard?
Flavio Briatore said, I want him to be fast, I want him to be consistent, and I want him not to crash. I think he didn't really achieve on any of those counts. By the end of this triple header, what do you think Franco needs to have done to satisfy Alpine and Flavio Briatore?
The car looks like, when it's in the right window, it is capable of points. So I think for Franco, he should just steady the ship in Monaco, get through the Monaco weekend. That's going to be a daunting weekend, I would suspect, for him, because he's not raced Formula One at Monaco, having only come into Williams at the tail end of last year. So try and get through Monaco cleanly. And then Spain, everybody knows Barcelona like the back of their hand. Maybe push for points in Barcelona. And having been quite harsh about Franco's performance this weekend, I still rate him incredibly highly. He's an incredibly lovely, laconic character. He's a pleasure to talk to. Inoculated with a phonograph needle, talks a lot. But I hope he succeeds at Alpine.
Guys, it's been fantastic to have both of you on the show. Greg's been on before, but your first time. Thank you for coming on, Danny. It's been great. We always end the show with our driver of the day. Max Verstappen won it on the telly. Who was your driver of the day, Danny?
Well, he deserves it, doesn't he? In the end, you start second, you win the race. I think, was there any big breakthrough through the race? I'm trying to think. I was watching Alex as well. Albon did a very, very good race. I would say it's between Alex and Max.
Come on, don't sit on the fence. Who is your...
I have to... Well, let's give it to Max. Let's be fair.
I think between Alex and Max is a good call, but I think for producing one of the greatest moves I've ever seen on lap one, Max Verstappen gets it.
I mean, you don't outbrake Oscar Piastri around the outside unless it's brilliant. I think we've seen enough from Oscar to know that he gives nothing for free. I'm going to go with Alex Albon because I think he has been driving brilliantly all year, but specifically with this race, you know, P7 in qualifying, and he was just like a terrier in the race. And I love the fact he tried to go around the outside of Charles Leclerc. It would have been so easy to say, we're on for a brilliant result, I'll just sit here. No, he was up for the fight, and I love that about him.
Yeah, true. Also, I have to mention Carlos. Carlos was good. No, honestly, he was very unlucky in the beginning. But both guys did a great job. But thank you very much, guys, for having me. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Are we going to see you at a race again soon?
I think I'll be around also in Monaco. Since I live there, I might come to say hi to you guys again.
Danny, thank you so much. And good luck with Lamborghini over in the States in IMSA as well.
Thank you.
Thanks very much to Daniel and Greg for joining us. And for more reaction and analysis from Imola, go to F1.com or the official F1 app. You can read more from Greg and his team of expert writers there. Race highlights are on the F1 YouTube channel. So is the trailer for F1 the movie. So make sure you check that out as well. And we will, of course, be back on Thursday with our preview of the Monaco Grand Prix. But for now, thank you very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.